tracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Hello and welcome to Inside Motorsport for another week. Colin Ford, a very busy week indeed. We're still trying to get all the nuts and bolts into place for this show as Volvo have quit Super Touring Cars. The Autosport Magazine International show is on over in England. We're hoping to link up with them. And plenty more news coming up, including we're looking at Mark Webber's testing times over there in from Silverstone this week. So that is all to come on the show this week.
Well, that's right. This weekend, we've had a lot of things happening, as you say, including Mark Webber doing his testing at Silverstone. He actually finished up his testing on Thursday. He was testing at Silverstone, finished up there on Thursday. And the test program he was running was on the 1999 A20 chassis, and it was to develop new electronic systems that will be used on the A21. And it says, in cold and wet conditions, Mark completed 36 laps of the national circuit, including a 15-lap run. Conditions were such that wet tyres had to be run all day, and due to that, the nature of the testing lap times were meaningless. The team made good progress in understanding the data and information collected, which will show benefits in the A21 runs later this month. So basically, wet and miserable. And he just effectively, he did what they told him to do in terms of testing, went round and round and round, and they were very happy with him.
All right, and for people who want to keep up with how Mark's doing in testing there, a new site that they've developed for this year is www.af1t.com.
Yep, and that then takes you into the new Arrows site. It includes a new section where they're updating each day in terms of the testing and what have you that's going on.
Alright, then we'll turn our attention now to the V8 super sedans of the Speedway ilk with Wade Auger joining us on the line. And congratulations, Wade, a new member of the family joining you this week.
Yeah, on December 31, my beautiful girlfriend Christy gave birth to a fantastic little baby boy named Liam. And man, I tell you what, that changes your life. You have a completely new respect for women and what they have to go through when you see what they go through to make little people come into the world. It's quite incredible.
Yeah, from my own perspective, whereas Craig can't do it because he's only recently married and hasn't got the stage getting children, from my point of view, having had a boy in November, I can tell you, get your sleep now while you can.
But I've given up doing that. It doesn't seem to work very well. I think we average about 3 hours a night, but as you know, it's all worth it.
Mm. Well, the story of the V8 super sedans for 1999-2000 season is the young guns, the second generation drivers, who are coming up and in their first season of V8 super sedan racing, we're seeing them really taking it to their fathers, uncles, brothers, you name it, on the V8 super sedan circuit.
Well, there's now, I think, there's almost six second generation racers. Obviously Luke Pine, the son of John Pine, he's 18 years of age. You have David Robertson, he's 18 years of age in his rookie season, and he's the son of Stu Robertson. Luke Pine last weekend won the Firecracker 50 lap for Archerfield, won $5,000. That's three feature race wins for the season so far. Robertson has two. You have Joel Carrick, he's a 19-year-old son of Robert Carrick, starting to raise a bit of a ruckus. We now have 16-year-old and 2 weeks Tim Watts, who's the son of Brian Watts, who races as well. You have Keith Sims, who's the second-generation racer. I mean, there's just a stack of second-generation racers. And for us, this is, I guess, comparable to what happened with V8 supercar racing sort of 5 years ago. There was far too many sort of old people in the sport. Well, now there's the Barguanas, the Tandas, the Lounges, and all those guys have got a break. And look where the sport's going now.
Going from strength to strength. And with the V8 super sedans, they've been putting on some very great racing this year, and a new professionalism has come across the board. The Victorians last season really started to lift the game, lift the profile of the V8 super sedans, and it's been carried on this year with all the people up in New South Wales, Queensland, and right across the board, all sort of taking a leaf out of Victorian super sedan or V8 sedan out of their book.
Well, I mean, now the All-Star V8 Super Sedan Series is probably the next step towards that professionalism. And last night at Parramatta, we had 40 cars there for the final round of the event. Unfortunately, we were supposed to have one on Wednesday at Newcastle, but bad weather forced us to abandon it. But last night, just truly phenomenal racing. Ron Pine, the Australian champ, decided to run the event at the last minute, showed up. They suited him into the format, and he went on to win the show last night from a very big drive from Bernie Robertson second, and John Pine placing third. Luke Pine came from position 16, I think, to finish fifth, or maybe even been fourth eventually. So just some phenomenal racing. Yeah, the only thing the sedans can sometimes let themselves down on is they tend to mess around a lot on restarts. They roll around and roll around and roll around. It becomes quite frustrating for spectators. That happened a bit last night, but not to take away from the spectacle, just phenomenal racing.
I was watching something during the week, yesterday I think it was, and I can't remember whether it was Warrnambool now or Borderline, but they managed to take out about four of them in the first corner as well, which doesn't make for a spectacular racing.
Yeah, that would have been Mount Gambier, Borderline through Mount Gambier. But I mean, the problem is a lot of times is that sedans do tend to race so very close together, and they are big cars and they do take a lot of stopping. They're certainly nowhere near as nimble or as manoeuvrable as a sprint car or a speed car or a formula, so they are quite cumbersome compared to say divisions like that. But I mean, aside from that, they did put an excellent show on, and last night we were very pleased. You know, there were seven Queenslanders there last night. Michael G's car has to be seen to be believed. Tanya Smith, my goodness, presentation of her car. Danny Smith has got to be the most attention to detail conscious constructor I've ever seen in my life. Just the standard of equipment was sensational. Of course, it was our second major Supercross event of the season at Parramatta, because on the February 5 we have the New South Wales title there.
All right, then, and everyone looking forward to that, as well as the conclusion of the World Series. Now, we're speaking to Brooke Patnell a little bit later on in the show, so we won't give away too much there, but that one is going to be a big finale to the World Series, in as much as everyone now is just going out there to win this thing at all costs.
Well, you know, I guess I was only thinking about this yesterday. I was thinking to myself, we all said before Brooke came back, wow, isn't Brooke going to be tough this year? You know, he's really going to be something special after spending all that time in America running with the Outlaws. And to be honest with you, really for the first part of the season when he was back, you really didn't see an enormous amount from him. And I sort of said to myself, well, gee, he's not quite as tough as we thought he'd be. Well, he was probably just taking his time to get used to the car and get settled, I don't know. But now he's driving the way that we expected that he would. And you know, to go back and run in the States again this year is going to be a big, big bonus for him. And I don't know whether you heard Skip Jackson's news either during the week, did you, Craig?
Well, I know he's been signed up to run World of Outlaws, which is a bit of a change for him after spending, I think, four seasons now in and around the north midwestern tracks, which are taking Knoxville and out there in Iowa and around that area.
Yeah, he's going to be running with the Zemco team based out of Pennsylvania. I hadn't heard too much about the actual Outlaw side of things. I know for sure that the running places like Williams Grove, Susquehanna, Fiddlin's Grove and places like that. And I imagine there'll certainly be a smattering of Outlaw runs for him. But I think that's a step he had to take, to be honest with you, Craig. I think that he's done all that he could at Knoxville. And, you know, when the Outlaws came by, Skip still struggled just a little. So he had to step up to the next level. That's what they've done now. And I think you'll see Skip be a vastly improved driver for it, which is pretty scary when you think about it.
Mm-hmm. For people that are thinking, hey, he's going a lot further east, you've got to remember that that's the hometowns of things like of people, most notably American tourists to Australia. Fast Freddie Raymer comes from Intercourse, Pennsylvania.
Oh, mate, there is so many fantastic drivers come out of that Pennsylvania region. Don't anybody think that it's far tougher in Pennsylvania than it is in Iowa. I'll make that comment right now. I mean, Skip runs regularly against maybe 25 cars at Knoxville. Well, now he'll be running against probably 40, upwards of 40, 50 cars. So it's going to be a much tougher deal for him, but I think he'll rise to the occasion. He's a hell of a driver. There is no more determined driver in Australian speedway than Skip Jackson.
A very, very finesse type driver, not a bulldog in the sense of a lot of other, not that I'm taking anything away from any of the drivers, but there are a lot of fellas that are just rough and tumble and just throw that car around, where Skip has that finesse.
Oh, he's a strategy racer. He will make up his mind that he knows when he goes to a World Series round that he has to qualify himself in the top three if he can. When he does that, he'll go to the back of his heat. He may not necessarily pass many cars. He'll find himself in the dash. He'll usually get himself up on the front row of the main, or if not, definitely the second row. And you'll see him run consistent top threes. And when other guys, the flashier drivers that you're talking about, crash out or, you know, have dramas or have to go to the rear of the field, then Skip's always still there at the front. The difference this year, I think, is they just had their backs against the wall very early. And the other night at Newcastle, he was forced to run a bit more aggressively than he normally would, and he flipped over. But he plays the percentage of skip, and it's worked very well for him.
Yes, that's right. Now, we might just sojourn off the sprint cars over to the IRL, because I know you follow that quite heavily. And a real shame coming from the IRL, from the IRL news service here, is that Sam Smith, who has just come back, from a very bad knee and ankle accident at the last race of the year, has had an accident 2 weeks ago now whilst testing at Walt Disney World Speedway a week ago. Unfortunately, the prognosis for Sam Smith is not good, and according to the reports that have been published by the Speedway Star, which have come from Treadway Racing, which Fred Treadway is the owner of that team, it has been a lot worse than we thought. It's like what happened to the actor Christopher Reeves, meaning that he has damaged his spinal cord permanently. So both injuries and the spinal cord was pinched between the third and fourth vertebrae in the neck. Doctors had performed surgery last week on Smith's neck in attempting to repair the damaged bones, but the damage to the spinal column has already been done. Now, former world driving champion Emerson Fittipaldi suffered from a similar injury at a crash in Michigan Speedway in 1996, but the impact with the turn two wall outside retaining wall did not result in the damage to the spinal cord, and the doctors were able to repair the damaged bones in his neck. Schmidt was not that lucky. So, for race fans that do want to send cards and letters of a way of cheering up Sam Schmidt, you can send them care of Ruth Culbertson at Treadway Racing. Now, the address there is 6017 West 71st Street, Indianapolis, Indiana. So 6017 West 71st Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, and the postcode there, or zip code there, call it what you will, is 46278. And all the donations are going to the CARA charities and the IRL ministries, or the Speedway's children's charities, in Sam Schmidt's name. But real disappointment there, and tragedy for Sam Schmidt, who has, as I said, just come back off a nasty injury.
Well, you know, I know the Treadway people particularly well. Ricky Treadway is the son of Fred Treadway, and they're a very close-knit team, and they're, you know, very determined operation, no doubt. But the beauty of race fans universally is that it doesn't matter what you drive. You know, if there's a racer down or a race fan down, there's always, you know, a big group of people that will step in to try and pick up the slack. So I'm sure that Sam will get overwhelmed by the support that he gets around the country and around the world. It would be good, as you said, if Australians can drop him a few emails as well.
All right, then. Well, Wade, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you again here on Inside Motorsport, and we look forward to catching up with you as the big shows keep rolling out there at Parramatta. Next weekend, everyone who wants to see everyone who's anyone in the sprint car needs to jump down the highway there and get themselves to PCR.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. A couple of weeks' time, we've got our 50,000 event coming up soon too, so I'll look forward to talking to you guys about that.
All right, thanks very much, Wade Auger.
See you guys.
See you later. Wade Auger joining us there on the line.
The Churchill Trust is now calling for Australians from all walks of life to apply for about 130 or so year 2001 Churchill Fellowships. You could be going overseas in 2001 for about 4 to 10 weeks on a Churchill Fellowship valued at about $15,000. You would have fares paid, a living allowance, fees covered, and an open door welcome. For an information booklet and application forms, send a stamped self-addressed business-sized envelope to Application Forms, the Winston Churchill Memorial Trust, 218 Northbourne Avenue, Braddon, ACT 2612. Closing date for applications is the 29th of February 2000, so don't miss this great and exciting opportunity.
At the Australian Legal Will Kit, we hope your completed will does nothing but gather dust for years and years and years. That's the idea. Make your will now, get it out of the way. Then you don't have to worry about it for the rest of your life, however long that may be. And remember, you can change or revoke your will at any time. So get ready to write down a phone number and call for delivery of the solicitor-approved Australian Legal Will Kit. It's quick, easy and inexpensive. Just $27.45 plus postage and handling. When it arrives, just follow the instructions and fill in the blank spaces. Do it now. Then just let it gather dust for the rest of your life. The Australian Legal Will Kit. The only will kit approved by the Australian National Will Register.
To order, call National Direct now on 1-800-246-868. Write the number down, 1-800-246-868. Call now, 1-800-246-868.
Sponsors of Triple F.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
In 2000 is Formula One reporter Rory Gordon, and Rory, probably a fitting time to catch up with you, as already the launches have started with BMW re-emerging itself into Formula One, and I guess that one this year, and then the combination next year with Michelin returning to Formula One with the BMW Williams team is going to be quite a change in the face of Formula One for, well, the first time in a little while.
Good evening, Craig, and Happy New Year to everyone. Yeah, indeed, it's some, after a few years, I suppose you could say, of torpor and nothing happening, these changes are quite interesting. Yes, as you said, the launches have started. BMW has come back into the Formula One fold with the launch of the BMW Williams F1 just a few days ago. Not a particularly outstanding looking car, and for anyone who's looking for some hints about what's going to be happening, I don't think you would have got any. The paint scheme was very interesting. It was basically just sort of a blue and white and BMW on it, but apparently BMW have actually bought all the signage on the car and will be approving everything that goes on, and the rumour is Reuters, the news agency, has bought quite a patch on it, so that will be coming up. They're looking at this year as a rebuilding year because of the new engine in the car. Of course, they fully realise, BMW do, that you don't usually get instantaneous success from a first season with a new engine. It's a question of building the team, building the engine, and getting everything working together. So that's going to be quite interesting. But I wonder why, given that Williams are going to be going with Michelin next year when it has yet another variable into the equation. I would have thought that it would allow them to, if they stuck with Goodyear, to reduce one of the variables and to leave it as is. But hey, that's the way it goes, so it's going to be very interesting. And over the next few weeks, all the rest of the launches are happening, and we'll see the new cars in theory, with their new paint schemes in theory, for the 2000 season.
Now, a couple of unusual things happening is that Eddie Irvine and the Jaguar team have already been testing the new car before it's actually launched, which is extremely unusual to see a car with the new livery on it out on a test track getting photographed by all the media and sundry before the big flashy do's that they do put on to launch the car.
Yes, well, some cynics might say that in this particular case, Irvine's not all that he's cracked up to be, and that he needs all the time in the car that he can get in order to get the team somewhere up to where it should be. A slightly different approach by Jaguar, and really all this flash and hoopla about having the launch of the car and everything else is really nothing more or less. It's a media event for the sponsors and for the and for people like that. It's not really in terms of the team and preparing for the coming season a significant factor that they account in. Of course, they have to because of the sponsors, but in terms of their racing program, it's really insignificant. And why not go out and start testing beforehand if you've got everything programmed and the car, and then it turns out the car's ready to be tested? Why not go out and start testing?
Yes, and well, I know that one launch that everyone was looking forward to was Scuderia Ferrari, who announced that their team did the launch this week, and well, interesting to see that Michael is taking a slightly different approach to his position in the team this year.
Indeed, and well, I don't know whether you could believe it or not. I personally don't. But let's hear what he actually had to say.
It's very clear I want to win the championship, but as you have seen last year, I was not in the position to win the championship, Eddie was, so I supported him and the team, and so I will do in the future. That means if I'm going to be slower than Rubens, then it means then I have to support him. If it will be the other way around, he will support me. But it is a very clear situation to him, to me, to the team, to everyone, and nobody has problems with this.
That's good to see that Michael's going to take that approach, but we were talking off air about it, and it's going to be very hard for Rubens Barrichello to get anywhere near the first man when all the experience is with the Michael Schumacher car.
Yeah, I can't see it happening that Rubens is going to get treated in the way that he anticipates, perhaps. Schumacher's been with the team for quite a few years now. He knows the people. He knows how the team operates. They know him. He knows, and more importantly, he knows the car, so he can just get in and he's away to a flying start, so to speak. Whereas Barrichello is going to have to start from scratch, and that all takes time, and I can't see, really, Barrichello making a significant impact on Schumacher this year. Although there are some people who have said that actually they reckon Barrichello will naturally, as a natural driver, will come out of the box very, very quickly and could, in fact, give Schumacher a bit of a scare, and in so doing, push him on to higher and higher things, and set him up for the world championship of drivers. So, you know, I suppose that's a thought we can bear in mind, and something we can wait and see what actually happens.
All right, now for Australians following Formula One, of course, our main interest has been on the rise and rise of Mark Webber. He's over in England again doing some testing for Arrows, and the news coming out of Arrows in the week is that their leading driver, the Japanese driver Tatagi, has decided to take his bat and ball and however many millions of dollars that he's got and take it back to Formula Nippon, which means there's only Pedro De La Rosa left as drivers contracted to the team, because Mark is trying to find the money to be a test driver. Well, here we go. We've got a big opportunity here. He could be a test driver and the number two driver if the money could come along.
Yeah, I don't think that Tatagi was ever seriously considered as being a driver in 2000. I think it was more or less if nothing else crops up, then I'll stay in Formula One. But I don't really want to. More to the point is that, interestingly, the side note is that this leaves Formula One without a Japanese driver for the first time for I can't think how many years. It's been quite a while.
10 at least.
There wasn't a Formula One driver, a Japanese driver in Formula One. As for Mark Webber, well, my personal belief is that what he should be doing this season, if everything comes together, is to take the test drive at Arrows, or any other team that is offering, take the test drive at Arrows and keep going and keep get his Formula 3000 drive sorted out. He has a Formula 3000 drive, and I think that would be much more important to allow him to go to the circuits where the races are run. A lot of the Formula 1 races are run, and he'll be able to see the circuits from that basis. Mark's career it was rising and rising and rising, and it took a bit of a dip last year, and this has put him back on the rails, if you like. So I think he hasn't really ever had a huge surge at any time in his career. He's always done it very slow, very steady, I think that's the way he's been going in his career, and we're seeing that's the way he should keep going.
All right then. Well, Rory, your early season predictions on the best paint job so far, because that's about as relevant as anything else you could decide on at the moment.
Oh, look, so few cars released yet. I think I have to say Jaguar. But that's about as relevant as saying that,
who has the best looking helmet?
I use a Westinghouse fridge or anything else like that. I mean, absolutely nothing.
All right, then. Well, Roy, pleasure to catch up with you here, and we look forward to a very exciting Formula One season. With the changes going on, it should prove to be that, and a few different names on cars, power plants, and what have you. It's going to, perhaps set the cat amongst the pigeons for when we get it all kicked off here in Melbourne.
I certainly hope so, Craig, and it was going to be great talking to you again throughout the season. I hope it's as interesting as it has been in the past years.
Actually, amongst the recent news in the last day or so is the fact that Jenson Button, who is the driver being tested for the second seat with Williams, has had a rather unsettling time during his testing. Apparently, there's been a number of technical problems with the car. The driver he's up against for the Williams drive apparently had a fairly good run, but then when Jenson Button got in the car, he had all sorts of problems. And as a result, Williams are sort of looking at the situation and saying, well, they might give him another try, because apparently they seem to think there's the potential there. But going from the new guns, the young guns of Formula One, we'll now jump back to one of the old guns and one of the most experienced men in Formula One and the Indy Champ Car Series, Mario Andretti. And there's talk that Mario Andretti will make a comeback to the 2000 Le Mans 24 Hours at the age of 60. Andretti, who turns 60 next month, has apparently been talking to two of the top line teams and should be driving for one or other of them. He's refused to be drawn on which squad he's been negotiating with. It, the fact that one of them could be Cadillac, and the other is he's not going to say who. So it looks like we could see an opportunity there for Mario Andretti to come back, and Andretti would be only the second driver after the late Graham Hill to win both the Formula One World Championship and the Indianapolis 500 Le Mans, but the closest he came to that was in 1995 when he finished a close second driving for the French Courage team. So interesting to see how things go there with Matt Neal. The other news, of course, during this week was the fact that Hyundai have unveiled their new World Rally Championship Challenger for 2000 at the Autosport International Show at Birmingham. And they've named that oil giant Castrol will be the team's main sponsor. So interesting to see the fact that Castrol, having missed out Toyota going under there in World Rally Championship, money going left, right and centre, they've now picked up on Hyundai. And actually, from the testing that Hyundai's been doing in Sweden, I think it is, they've been doing very, very well. But joining us on the line now, a man who's had a fairly busy week, Chris Nixon, with a couple of major announcements during the week, one of them being the fact that Volvo's withdrawing, first of all, from Australian Super Touring. And we'd like to tell us a bit on what's happening there, Chris.
Hi there, Colin. Yes, the news early this week was that Volvo Dealer Racing Australia, that's the official factory Volvo team, has put on hold its involvement in the BIC Gases Australian Super Touring Championship for this season. And I dare say they will decide in due course what the future is.
Now, there's been some talk that there is a bit of interest in the newly created super production class. I suppose it's one of those things they have to look at, you know, the cars that are eligible and how much it's going to cost compared to a super touring type challenge.
Well, that's correct. I think the super production category is very appealing to manufacturer teams such as Volvo, because, of course, the cars that run in that have minimal modifications, and even more so than super touring, they're an example, an opportunity to present competition versions of your road going cars and to demonstrate the qualities of your road going cars as well. And as we know, there are many manufacturers in Australia, New Zealand, and throughout Europe showing strong interest in super production at the moment.
Now, of course, one of the reasons behind Volvo playing this pull-out from the Australian Super Touring Championship is, of course, Volvo Car Corporation in Sweden has pulled out of the British Touring Car Championship for 2000. They're going to be back in 2001, apparently with a new car, a new engine setup. And, of course, the team wasn't going to have the support that would have been available in terms of engines, development, all those type of things from the UK.
That's correct, Colin. I suppose Volvo was in quite an unusual position in Australia as the only, perhaps, pure works team. and the whole racing program relied very heavily on input and support from Volvo's racing activities in the UK, which were conducted for it by TWR Racing. With the decision to withdraw from the BTCC at the end of last season, Volvo's relationship with TWR has come to an end. Therefore, the facilities that the team in Australia drew on in the past for engine rebuilds, for spare parts, for technical advice, etc., is basically not available, and it's nigh on impossible to carry on a program with a sophisticated car like the Volvo S40 on your own, so to speak, in Australia.
Yeah, it makes it very difficult, particularly if you want to be at the front end of the field and compete against people who are receiving the latest updates for their cars from overseas.
Well, of course, it's quite different to running a Holden or a Falcon V8 supercar, which is locally developed. The Australian team has always run last season's Volvo S40. Similarly, the Audi team has always run last season's Audis, I guess, and Paul Morris has run the latest version that was ever available to him of 3 Series BMW. But all we ever were in all those cases, I guess, and with all the teams, fundamentally is end users of cars that were developed and raced overseas before they came to Australia. So we're all heavily reliant on overseas technology to keep these cars going. And without Volvo, as I say, actively involved in the BTCC, it wasn't a viable proposition for Australia.
I think even if I sort of go back in history, back to the days of the 240 Turbo that Robbie Francovic used to run when, you know, Volvo was some of its early days of touring car racing in Australia. Again, he depends on support that he was getting from, I think it was the Nordica team and Eggenberger who was even running at the time. So we've always had that need for that support for the cars here in Australia.
That's quite correct. It's certainly to be hoped that Volvo will see itself back in competition when it ceased fitting, however, Colin. It's been a very good exercise for Volvo over 5 seasons. They came back into motor racing in 1994, with a couple of production cars, an 850 turbo, as my memory serves me, and also an 850 normally aspirated cars. These were both production cars that they ran in the 12-hour and in the production car championship that year. And in 1995, they got the 850 wagon out, put Tony Scott in it, and took part for the first time in the Super Touring Championship.
And what an incredible car to watch that one was. I know that Tony's the other car having wrung its neck mercilessly.
Well, I think it was a pretty hard thing to drive. It could be revealed now. It was
diabolical.
Yeah, it was pretty. It was pretty heavy going, I think, Tony.
Now we'll move on to some other things there. A bit of activity up in Queensland Raceway in terms of what's been happening up there regarding the future of Queensland Raceway.
Well, there's no decision forthcoming yet from the receivers and managers, and through them from the government at this stage, but I think that most of the supporters of Queensland Raceway are hopeful in the next few weeks we will see some sort of outcome and some sort of plan put in place as to how the venue will be run in this coming season. At this stage, Queensland Raceway has confirmed the Queensland 500 for September. It is one of 3 Queensland circuits in the running for the sprint round of the V8 Supercar Championship in July, and I guess also for the Queensland round of the V8 Light Series in May. At this stage, however, Avesco is still deciding whether those two rounds I just spoke of where it will go either to Queensland Raceway or to Lakeside or to Darlington Park. Darlington Park, of course, not yet in a position to obtain a track licence from CAMPS.
But of course, I suppose after all the hard work that's been put in terms of getting everything sorted out with Queensland Raceway, and, you know, sort of the, having got over the initial teething problems for the 500, to move some of the rounds back to Lakeside would probably be a bit of a retrograde step in some way, particularly since the pressure is on Lakeside, you know, it's up on the market apparently still.
Well, I don't know about a retrograde step. I'm sure Lakeside wouldn't see it that way. Everybody knows that the opportunity to stage a V8 supercar round of the Shell Championship Series, of course, brings the promoter a fair amount of revenue, which in most cases helps them to carry on throughout the rest of the season. In the present financial state of Queensland Raceway, of course, it would be very helpful for them, but no doubt the promoters of Lakeside would say the same thing, and it might be the it might be a very significant injection of income for Lakeside also. So that's a difficult decision that the board of Bovesco has to make, I dare say, quite soon.
Yeah. Now, in terms of other championships, what's happening with anything else that people got programmed for 2000 Queensland Racing? Is it basically on hold at this time, or are events still being held there?
Well, I think there are negotiations underway, is my understanding, with various organisations both in the world of car racing, kart racing, and motorcycle racing. But it's a little bit difficult for the managers of Queensland Raceway to confirm any program at this stage until such time as the ownership and management of the track is clarified, Colin. And as I say, at the moment, the track remains under receivership. Receivers appointed by the Queensland Treasury Corporation. Until that situation is resolved, we don't know what the outcome will be, and we don't know how they're going to be able to confirm their program for this season. In the month of December, the receivers called for expressions of interest for either managing or running events at Queensland Raceway this year. I am told that there were three organisations that have lodged expressions of interest. Nobody knows what they are. And the only one that we know for sure the identity of is a company from the Queensland Newspapers Group, of all things. The connection there obviously being that the managing director of Queensland Newspapers is one John Cowley, a well-known GTP driver of a Class B Commodore, and also chairman of the Indy Corporation. So nobody knows yet what the three expressions of interest might comprise, whether it's to run events or whether it's to make some offer to run the whole venue for the entire season. But I dare say that all will be revealed soon, and we all hope that there is a satisfactory outcome. The one thing that I think all spectators and competitors can be sure of, and that is that there will be an active and busy program of racing at Queensland Raceway this season.
You know, I think a lot of people are looking forward to things getting sorted out so that we can just get on with the racing and stop worrying about other things, which is...
I believe that that there will be 3 days of testing by V8 teams this coming week, Colin, just as by way of demonstrating or providing an example of the fact that Queensland Raceway has not ground a halt through all this difficulty. V8 testing is scheduled for tomorrow, for Wednesday, and for Friday.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. So no doubt a few of the guys up there will be trying to get some mileage on the cars before they head up for the first round of the championship down at Phillip Island in February. So should be some hectic times there.
Yes, I think it's a busy time for the V8s, and they like coming to Queensland Raceway to test because the facilities there are fairly good open facilities. It's a pretty safe track for testing on, perhaps not as demanding in some drivers' eyes as Lakeside, but undoubtedly you run less risk of hitting something if you run off, and of course nobody wants to run off at any time, but particularly during testing. Queensland Raceway has very big runoffs, has gravel traps, and is a pretty safe racetrack to do that sort of thing. Also, the drivers tell me that they like Queensland Raceway because some of the corners are more similar to circuits down south than are the corners at Lakeside.
Mm. Well, that's the thing you're always looking for whenever you're testing, is to find that sort of a track that gives you the conditions that are similar to what you're running elsewhere, and if you can't get that somewhere else, well, yeah, it makes it very difficult to do realistic testing. That's right, you don't go and test it at a track that doesn't have similar corners, doesn't have similar sort of situation.
Absolutely, but having said that, I guess, Colin, everybody acknowledges that Lakeside, while it doesn't perhaps replicate many circuits down south, that's because in its own right it is a fantastic little track.
Yeah, very unique in some of the things it does, particularly Hungary in the carousel.
Absolutely, sensational circuit.
Yeah, get your hair tangling. Well, very much, thanks very much for your time with us this evening, Chris Nixon, and no doubt we'll probably catch up with you one of the race meetings around the tracks during the year.
We certainly will, Colin. Thanks for your interest.
Thank you very much. That was Chris Nixon joining us from up in Queensland. And just in some other news that we've got happening around the place, news this week that sports car racer Johnny Malum has signed to drive new Porsche 996 GT3R for Australian outfit Team Skier. The 30-year-old will line up this year's American Le Mans Series and at Daytona next month. He's a former Porsche Supercup driver, and he hopes to enter this year's Le Mans 24 Hours and link up with the Ricer Cars teammate David Murray. Marlam hopes the team knew the championship will be competitive in the first few races. So it's going to be interesting. Team Skier Racing Daytona on February 4th and 5th, and that's where we're going to also see Cameron McConville back behind the wheel of a Porsche for his racing there as well. So we might see a few more names pop up. Usually there's a couple of Australians and Kiwis end up at Daytona.
An interesting one coming out of the American Le Mans Series. It has finalised its 2000 racing schedule. And, well, what a second year it's going to be for this famed, well, for this newly crowned event. The famed European course of Silverstone in England will be part of the championship in May 13, and the Nürburgring in Germany on July 9. Now, the American Le Mans Series certainly spreading its wings rather quickly. This announcement gave the series 12 races in three continents for its 2000 campaign. The Eurosports will be televising the 500-kilometre event at Silverstone and the 1,000-kilometre event at the Nürburgring on a same-day delayed basis in Europe. Speed Vision and Fox Sports Net will provide coverage in North America. So it's an interesting one indeed. That gives the American Le Mans Series 2000 the schedule as followed. The Superflow, 12 hours at Sebring on March 18. Then they go off to Lowe's Motor Speedway in North Carolina on April 1st. Then it's over to England May 13. Nürburgring on July 9. Sears Point on July 23. Motorsports up there in Canada. And I must say hello to all our listeners who listen to us through 7thGear.com. I just was surfing the net the other day and found out that the 7thGear.com over there in Toronto, Canada, are enjoying the action from Inside Motorsports. So I must say hello to them. Look, then we go to the Texas Motor Speedway in September 2nd, Portland International Raceway on September 10th, the Petit Le Mans, of course, that big weekend on September 30, Laguna Seca on October 15, Las Vegas Motor Speedway on October 29, and then December 31st, the Race of a Thousand Years at Adelaide.
And we will be there covering the event with our good man down in LA, David Langfield. We've already planned our trip to the far side of Australia. A 12-hour drive it is, folks. That's how far it is from our studios in Canberra to Adelaide. I can tell you it'll be worth every hour of it.
Joining us on the line now, a man who has picked up, I think, his third World Series Sprint Car Championship here in the best possible way by winning the penultimate round of the World Series at Brisbane's Archerfield Raceway last night. Congratulations, Brooke.
Thanks, Greg.
I guess now six wins in the second half of the season has really captured this race meeting for you, along with good, strong performances over in the West when Shots just was unbeatable. And it comes down to the final race of the series, home track Parramatta, and probably a farewell race of some sorts, as you have now got a fantastic deal to go over to the World of Outlaws next for this season.
Yeah, since basically the week before Christmas, I my whole life has just really turned around. We signed a contract to go and drive for the Casey's General Store team on the World of Outlaws circuit for next year. That was all going, that just took a lot of pressure off me. I'd been stressed a little bit trying to figure out where we were going, in what direction with our motor racing, and my motor racing is my life. So, I was sort of a little stressed, and I think that hurt me at the start of the year. Even when Donnie won the six races at the start, we were always there in contention, and driver error had cost us one of those races, but since then we've definitely been able to turn it around.
In fact, it has been a very, very busy time for you, because on top of winning the World Series Sprint Cars, you've got engaged to be married to your long-time girlfriend, and just everything sort of seems to be falling in place for you.
Yeah, it's definitely been a pretty big change. I've always been very fortunate with the people that have backed us and supported us. And Laura's been a long-time supporter. She's been 100% behind me. We sat down and figured out in the last 3 years we've probably spent... I spent less than 12 months in Australia, and we've probably spent less than 14 months together in 3 years. So it's been very tough on her, but as she supported us and it's made our racing... a lot easier, and so things have just turned around. Everything's just on a roll, and I couldn't be happier right now.
On this weekend, an interesting race meeting, or an interesting two race meetings you had there up in Queensland, and no doubt the fans were extremely happy to see you, Schott, having a great duel for most of the race, and also seeing Max Dumsny. This year's been a bit of a comeback year for Max.
Yeah, Max is sort of, it's been very difficult for Max. Up until recently, he's been trying to do his, like he's had other things on his mind. He's touring car racing, he's had the NASCAR, and trying to incorporate several things in one year, and possibly his business commitments. And it takes a lot out of you. I know how much it took out of me last year when I was trying to put our World of Outlaws campaign together. It takes a lot away from preparation and just more mental preparation than anything. So Max has had a resurgence this year. Shots has been very fast all year. Last night we didn't qualify so well, but we came out of seven and worked our way up, and we're actually running second behind Shots when he actually got a flat tyre on a yellow, but there was still 16 laps to go, and I believe we had the fastest car there last night. I don't think whether it would have been a flat tyre or not, I don't think there's any question on what the end result would have been.
Now, for yourself, with the deal over in the United States, how is that going to affect what you're doing from now on? Now, obviously the $50,000 show at Parramatta later on in the season was one that you were definitely eyeing off, and I would imagine that Shell Helix and Phantom Comics, all your great sponsors there, would also have, would like to see you at it.
Yeah, it was a situation. We're still, with tomorrow's basically crunch time to know exactly what our plans are. The way things have panned out, they wanted me back in America around the 26th of January, and basically I put it forward to them that there's one race in the country that we've never won, and I'm hoping and I believe that this is our year, and that's the Australian titles. They've given me permission to stay for that, and then they wanted me straight on the plane the next day to get everything rolling for our campaign in America, which starts on the, I think it's the 23rd or 25th of February. So the $50,000 was a little in doubt. They haven't definitely said I can't do it, but they haven't told me I can. So Monday, Tuesday this week, the pressure will be put on to allow us to stay for that $50,000 to win race at Parramatta, which is definitely going to be a historic race in itself.
Someone like Jason Bright, who's trying to get himself an Indy Lights drive over in the United States, has got commitments from Channel 10 that they'll be putting packages together to help with any sponsors that he's going to be coming up with to secure his deal. Have you had any commitments from anyone, or have your sponsors that are here, the Shell, Phantom Comics, there's a whole host of them, which you probably need to rattle off, but to get them all right anyway. But I'll get you to rattle them off whilst I think of the question.
Yeah, no, with all our sponsors support just over here, we've never gone into any sponsorship in a short-term relationship, and that we can see that by our relationship with Winfield, but and we still socialise with those people, but everyone involved in the Shell Helix, Phantom Comics, we've picked up the support 5 years ago in a personal sponsorship, which was Kelly and Associates from America, and they're still backing us to this day and supporting us in America, and they were the only people that got us going and put us on the road last year with the World of Outlaws. So we've just been very fortunate to have those people behind us. There are a lot of smaller associate sponsors that helped us out, and we're very appreciative to them. But it's just been something that that the Speedway identity, we seem to struggle trying to get that TV coverage and the support that a lot of the touring car stars do get. We've worked on a lot of things to a couple of years ago trying to put a TV package where we actually almost did a documentary on what it'd be like to do a World of Outlaws campaign, but we're still working on different things, and I believe Fox Sports are covering I think pretty close to 20 races this year of the World of Outlaws schedule, so hopefully we can get a bit more exposure and
keep Australia more informed on what we're doing. The problem we had keeping people informed last year was going out and doing everything on our own, and the time of what it takes to run an outlaw team was more than I actually anticipated.
Now, for this year, in the world of outlaws, Shell is obviously a multinational company. Are they offering any support with the racing over there?
No, it's very unfortunate. All our campaigns that we've done in America, we've never been able to take our national sponsors across there, whether they be international or not. But we'll be over there representing Shell, but unfortunately we're not getting any support on the international market from Shell or any of our Australian sponsors, but we'll be there representing them. I represent anyone that supported us. We still do try to represent Winfield, even though we're not sponsored by them. We just try to represent everyone involved. It's a situation that the Australian companies have got to get benefit out of what's going on in America.
I remember one of your first sponsors, actually, which would be a handy one to have when you were on the road last year, and that was Pizza Hut.
Yeah, Pizza Hut would have got us out of a lot of trouble. We're talking going back now to I was about 14 years of age, and it was my first ever sponsorship. I put a proposal together, and I sent it off to Pizza Hut, their head division in South Australia, and came back, and they sent us a couple of tablecloth T-shirts for crew uniforms, a year's supply of pizza, and a little bit of cash funds to put towards my racing. But it definitely would have beaten eating 29-cent hamburgers on Tuesdays at McDonald's.
And the other thing is, a few years ago, you were part of the Toyota program for the junior drivers that got you onto the mountain there. A few years ago, you were also trying to get something together with Phoenix and Pinnacle Motorsports. Now it would seem that you're locking yourself into a long-term career in the United States.
It's heading that way. People just don't realise how tough and demanding this World of Outlaws schedule is. I spoke to Greg Hodner, who's done the Outlaws for 5 years, and he's had 2 years off the road, and he reckons it's the best thing he's ever had. He's a lot more refreshed going into this year. I never forget where I've come from. When we did do the 2 litre touring cars with Central Motorsports, I didn't forget that I was booked out and all, and I'd come from Speedway. And I never will forget where I've come from. If the opportunity arises, I see we still get all our information in America on what's happening in Australia, and there is nothing wrong with what Speedway is. But if an opportunity arose where we could look at going into the V8 supercars, that is something I'd definitely like to have a look at, something a little different. It takes totally different driving aspects of what Speedway is and concept. But if the opportunity doesn't arrive, I'm more than happy to keep campaigning in America with the World of Outlaws, or looking at a Indy Lights diversion in America, and just coming back to Australian racing as well. I love our motor racing. I don't think there's any competitor motor racing now that's done as many race meetings as what we have in the last 12 months.
I think the other thing that's for people who haven't been over to the Estates either is that World of Outlaw races are household names, just like supercar races are here at home. And for people going, geez, going over America race sprint cars, well, the names like Kinzer, Swindell, of course the dude Lasowski, all these names are very well known to people, because just so many people with, what, I think 60, 70 races a year at least in the World of Outlaws, the cars are very accessible, the racing's very accessible, and it's not like the supercars that might only have one or two visits to a state every year. You go to just about all the states now on the World of Outlaws series.
Yeah, this year with the Outlaw schedule, we'll be contesting 104 race meetings. The drivers are very accessible, and that's one thing that I think is very important in motor racing or in any sport, that the crowd and the people can get to meet the competitors. Something that does get a little bit difficult in road racing, and that's one thing that I love about Speedway. We turn up, we meet the people, we race, we meet the people after the race meetings, we pack up and we head down the next road. But I think this year in America we'll compete in over 35 states. And as I say, there's 104 nights of racing. So Steve Kinzer, like here we are, we're talking about multi-million dollar sponsorships with Quaker State and the Channel Lock with Sammy Swindell. They are household names, and those guys have diversed into the IROC series in America, which is they take the elite out of each motor racing division and put them in equally based cars. And Steve Kinzer did that 3 years ago, I think, and pulled off a couple of wins. So there's definitely no lack of respect for the sprint car competitors.
Well, Brooke, we wish you all the best for the upcoming season in the United States. We certainly are looking forward to seeing the results coming through every week here on Inside Motorsport. And also congratulations on last night, and at least two big shows ahead of you, one next Saturday night at Parramatta, and then, of course, the Aussie title.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. As we've said this year out as just being the biggest year we could have on wins. I know I've learned a lot in America this year, and I think we've been, the amount of people that have told us has just been a complete different side of maturity in my driving this year. Nothing can benefit more than experience, and we're just hoping to try and now win this final, win the Classic down in Warrnambool, and just that Australia one. That's the one thing that's eluded us all these years. So hopefully this will be our year. If not, we'll be back again next year.
And over in the UK, things are booming in the British GT Championship. The 2000 Privilege Insurance British GT Championship is looking to have more than 30 cars registered for the championship at the time. The season kicks off at Thruxton on the 26th of March. The British GT Championship is actually one of three championships which take part in the British Power Tour. It's a season set up where they're actually having a number of different categories brought together in a package deal, very similar to what Toker has done in the UK for the British Touring Car Championship, and Invesco does for the Shell Series here in Australia. And it looks like they're going to be running a whole range of races during that time, but they've got them running as a 60-minute race for GT cars, and they've got cars such as Chrysler Vipers, Lister Storms. They've got the new TVR Sabera Speed 12. Now, I've heard some news during the week that that's having a little bit of trouble with some homologation arrangements. The Lotus V8, Marcus's, Porsche GT2s. They've got a GTO category, which has got Ferrari, Chrysler, Marcos, TVR, Nissan, Lotus, Caterham and Ginetta. So it really is quite a strong setup.
And anyway, we're as we hear the music starting in the background, someone's keen to go, so we'll wrap this one up fairly quickly. But the interesting news there is the GT Championship has changed its name to the Power Track Championship, and everything's on track there for, well, a very exciting year of GT racing with American Le Mans. The announcement's coming out reasonably quickly about a few of the Golden Crown GT races, like the Daytona Rolex 24 Hour, and also the Le Mans 24 Hour. It's going to be pretty exciting to see how things go. Just finally, it's it was billed as the Australian versus United States challenge that evolved into the newly appointed Victorian David Murcott enduring many restarts to take out the SRA Hoosier Series round number 2 at Western Auto Raceway from American Chad Kenneth driving the JK Racing car. Now, a large crowd was in attendance to see David Murcott take the win. He now leads the series with I'm just trying to find the points. No points here. But he's now leading the series from David Swain. So Swain is in second place, and then Mike van der Bremen is in third.
Yeah, actually, the Power Tour package that they're running, which is run by the British Racing Drivers Club, its content consists of the British GT Championship, the British Formula 3 Championship, the National Saloon Championship, which is having some of their competitors going across to the British Touring Car Championship Toker package, and the MGF Cup. And they've also got a couple of things such as they've got some guest series that come in: Ferrari Maranello Challenge, the Marcos Mantis Challenge, the Mini Miglias and Sevens, National Supersports, Formula Vauxhall, Porsche Cup and TVR Tuscans. And then there's the other thing they've got running as well, is they've got the British Racing and Sports Car Club package, which is one of the other ones that's running, and they run things such as the Euro Formula Palmer Audi, T3 TVR Tuscans, Porsche Cup, and they're supported by things like Caterham Road Sports, Caterham Superlights, Amok Intermark, Alfa Romeo's Formula Ford ZTEC Challenge and the like. And that's actually one of the things that is going to be interesting to see what happens in the next few weeks, because there is apparently announcements due shortly on the future of Formula Ford in Australia and the old Kent series and ZTEC, and if they're going to go to a Wings and Slicks Formula and all the rest of it. So we'll keep our ear to the ground on what's happening here with the Australian Formula Ford Championship.
Yeah, the other division too that I'm looking at speaking to someone very, very shortly is Australian Formula 2 and Australian Formula 3, both coming under the one banner here in Australia for regulating bodies, which I found interesting, and hopefully will provide, hopefully will not detract from open wheel racing, will provide another feeder category, which seems to be starting to get a little bit, the water starting to get a little bit polluted there.
Mm. I think the idea is with the Australian Formula 3 guys is they're looking at the fact they can import cars from Europe and potentially offer a starting point for a lot of the Europeans down here if they want to. At the same time, it gives the Australians a chance to translate. If a guy can do a couple of seasons here, he can then go to the UK with his experience here in the same type of car rather than jumping from a car that bears no resemblance to what they're running over there.
Mm. All right then, thanks once again for joining us here in the studio, Colin Ford.
No worries, we'll be back in next week.
And indeed we will. I hope you can catch up with the show midweek on Martin Gross's Breakfast Show, and also stay tuned next week where we hope to have a bit more about drag racing coming up with Willowbanks to give you all the results from that one.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple SFM Canberra via Comrade Sat, with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.